It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It was white smoke and a new pope yesterday in Vatican City's St. Peter's Square. Pope Francis I, who is otherwise known as Jorge Mario Bergoglio of Argentina, is the new pope, the 266th pope of the Roman Catholic Church and the first from Latin America, as well as the first Jesuit and the first non-European to be chosen pope. Betsy Heil has been covering this historic event for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review and joins us now live via Skype from Rome. Betsy Heil, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. What was it like to be there yesterday afternoon as the white smoke billowed and a new pope emerged?
Well, it was pretty crazy. I think most of the people around me weren't expecting it to happen yesterday. They thought it would. People were talking about how they were going to come back the next day, and there were quite a few people there. It was like a sea of umbrellas because it was raining, and it had been raining all day. It rained in the morning when the black smoke came out, but that didn't seem to stop people, and it was starting to fill up, and then all of a sudden there was white smoke, and the place went wild. There was this huge roar, and people are woo-hoo, you know. They started chanting, Viva el Papa, and we have a new pope, and then just even more people started running into the square, filling it up and filling it all the way down the main avenue outside of it and along the colonnades. And you just got the surge of people, crush of people moving forward, everyone trying to get closer and closer to see what the new pope looked like. And people broke out in hymns and periodic chants for the papa, as they called him. And it was pretty amazing when they came out and announced who he was. A lot of people were like, who is that? What? You know, there was a moment there where people were trying to figure out who he was. And then the crowd started chanting when they said he would take the name Francis the First. They started chanting Francesco, 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 for, you know, Italianizing his name. But it was massive, hundreds of thousands of people down there. It was pretty amazing.
And it was interesting to see the way that he really engaged the crowd in what seemed to be a unique way. What did you make of that?
Well, yes, he joked. He said when the bishops of the cardinals were chosen, you know, decided to pick the bishop of Rome, they went along, you know, to the ends of the earth to find him, and everybody laughed. And also he asked for them to pray for him. And there was a moment of silence that was very quiet all across the square. And that was also very interesting. And then he said, like, good night and sleep well or something like that. And so people started laughing.
It was late there, wasn't it?
Yes, he came out a little bit after 8. The white smoke came out a little bit after 7. And it was over an hour before he came out. And it was nighttime when he came out. People were thrilled, energized. I ran into some Pittsburgh Duquesne students who had been there in the morning. They had been there all day through the rain and were just, you know, so excited to, you know, had seen what, you know, one kid called it epic. And to see what they had seen throughout the day, even though they didn't know anything except that he was Argentinian.
Well, it was interesting. You had a great quote in your piece in this morning's Tribune Review from a Pittsburgher named Michael Conway, who said, quote, he's an American, just a little more south than we thought, end quote, which was an interesting way of putting it.
Exactly. Today I was meeting with Cardinal Worrell, and we ran into another cardinal who said, yes, everyone said, see, he's an American, you know, and he said, we think of ourselves as American, but the rest of the world thinks North and South America.
Was there a strong feeling among the people that were gathered and particularly those that, you know, the Americans that you were associating with, the Pittsburghers that you were meeting, that we might have the first pope from the United States?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of, I talked to a lot of Americans in the 2 days of the conclave, and And, you know, the kids were all like, oh, an American Pope would be cool, you know. And others were saying, yeah, they would love to have an American Pope. And these seminarians were saying, you know, they were like, oh, if it's an American Pope, I'll faint, you know. And so there was a lot of, they were thrilled that for the first time that an American Pope could even be considered, because before this, it had always been like there wasn't even a chance that that could happen. And so I think just even to be in part of the mix really made them excited.
So what happens next, Betsy? You know, we hear that there are already work being done, appointments being made at the Vatican, that Pope Francis had to duck in a side door as though he were a rock star, which I guess on some level he is now. What is happening today in Rome? Betsy, are you there? Well, it sounds like we lost Betsy, but we got a pretty good sense of what was going on yesterday as she witnessed history in the making, the first non-European pope to emerge, Pope Francis I, who is the new pope, the 266th pope of the Roman Catholic Church, and the first from Latin America. And the new pope adopted the name of the patron saint of the environment and animals this week, St. Francis of Assisi. Catholic nuns who have devoted their lives to living in the way of St. Francis were over the moon when the announcement was made. Our content partners at the Allegheny Front talked with the Sisters of St. Francis in the Whitehall section of Pittsburgh about the 12th century saint.
Okay, I was at the reception desk answering the phone, and Sister Teresa called me. She said, Sister Michelle, there's the white smoke. You know, there's white smoke from the chimney. Put the TV on. And as the people were coming in, because we had our soup sale today, a lot of people, and they just were in awe, too. They stopped to look, you know. We're all getting so excited. I mean, it was like, you know, this is what we've been waiting for, you know. I'm so glad to hear that, you know. It was on Wednesday rather than Thursday or Friday, so it was wonderful.
St. Francis considered everything as sacred.
Everyone was so near and dear to him, to his heart, you know. He had great respect, even for the little animals, you know, and little bugs and that. He never stepped on them.
We Franciscans follow in the footsteps of Jesus, and Francis did that by his way of life, his way of simplicity, and his love for the poor.
This pope who took the name of Francis, he lived the simplicity of Francis as a cardinal and bishop, and he knows Latin America. I lived in Brazil for 48 years, and Latin America must be very happy to have this pope. He understands the problems of the third world. And he is a Jesuit, but he lives the simplicity of Francis. When we got news that he took the name of Francis, most of us already knew the line of thought that he would have, what kind of a pope this pope would be. He would be simple. He would give a lot of value to poverty, to the poorest people, and he would try to reform many things with the Holy See.
And those were the Sisters of St. Francis in the Whitehall section of Pittsburgh talking about their reaction to the selection of the new pope who has taken the name of St. Francis. And I'm joined now in Studio A by Duquesne University School of Law Dean Emeritus and Professor of Law Nicholas Cafardi, who has a Doctor of Canon Law degree from the University of St. Thomas Aquinas in Rome. Nicholas Cafardi, thank you for joining us.
Well, you're welcome.
Is there any surprise on your part at how quickly this pope was chosen in just five votes?
Well, conclaves in recent times have not been long conclaves. In recent times, they've been, you know, Benedict was elected in four votes. It took a little bit longer for John Paul the second. John Paul I was elected quickly. So long conclaves aren't really expected.
People in the press called Bergoglio an underdog and a rank outsider. The odds for those placing bets was 33-1. How much of a surprise was the selection of Pope Francis for those within the Vatican as well as throughout the Catholic Church.
Well, interestingly enough, even though papal conclaves are supposed to be secret, there was a journal of the last conclave that was leaked and published in Italy a little bit before the election. And that revealed that in the election where Benedict was chosen, the runner-up actually was Bergoglio.
So he was very close to being selected in 2005.
He got 40 votes that time around.
Why do you suppose that he was chosen now?
Good question. One interpretation could be is they wish they had picked him the first time. I'm not sure about that. I understand that his interventions, from what I read in the Italian papers, his interventions in the general conclaves made a really good impression on the other cardinals, especially what he said about the need to really reform the Roman Curia.
Part of the search for a candidate was to find one untouched by scandal, which apparently this man is for the most part. Describe the search and the importance of that in how the cardinals went about choosing a new pope.
Do you mean the sexual abuse scandal or?
The sexual abuse scandal and just any hint of scandal. Apparently this man has a record above reproach.
That certainly appears to be the case. There's no real great vetting that goes on. You know, whenever you get appointed to a U.S. government position, you go through a lot more vetting than we have whenever somebody gets elected pope. Basically, the cardinals need to rely on the person's own self-representation. You know, if you know you have those kinds of problems, you don't let your name go forward.
What is the significance of Pope Francis being the first Jesuit pope?
Well, normally men from religious orders don't even get to be made bishop. That only really started in our church with John Paul II. He made a number of religious order members into bishops because normally that's just not seen as a part of their religious life. So we have an order person and then we have a Jesuit. Typically, the head of the Jesuit order is called the Black Pope. So now I guess we have two Jesuit popes, the Black Pope, who's the head of the order, and the guy that gets to wear the white. I think the most important thing about a Jesuit pope is the Jesuit charism. And the Jesuit charism is one typically of education, and this man has been an educator. But it's also one of outreach to the poor. I mean, the Jesuits in Latin America have been in the forefront of defending the rights of the poor, of criticizing income inequality in the global South. So I think we could expect all of that from him. He really seems to be very much in that mode.
We're talking with Nicholas Cafardi. He is an expert on canon law, dean emeritus, and a professor of law at the Duquesne University Law School about the historic selection of Pope Francis I, the first pope from Latin America, the first non-European pope. The fact that he's from such a different part of the world, how will that impact his papacy?
Well, you know, he's the first non-European chosen in modern times. And it will be interesting to see how that third world perspective affects his papacy. But it's also, I think, an indication of where the church is very strong and growing these days. It's in the global South. So certainly this was a nod, I think, by the cardinal electors that part of the church has become more and more important in the life of the universal church. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of a perspective he brings as a result of that. I am imagining that it'll be the same one he brought as Archbishop of Buenos Aires. He said that he didn't think it was his job as a bishop to be a regulator of the faith so much as a transmitter of the faith.
I just wanted to pass along a comment. We had Chuck from the East End who called to say that Pittsburgh's Bishop Zubik decided not to move into the lavish bishop's mansion, just as Bergoglio chose to live a modest lifestyle. How important is it for bishops and high-ranking clergy to live modestly?
Well, I think that whenever people see our hierarchy with the apparent trappings of great wealth, it appears to be a message. They're sending a signal which is contrary to the Christian message, huh? that the gospel values would involve an emulation of the poor, a defense of the poor, and you wouldn't be expected to live a rich life yourself. So I think when people see that, and again with his choice of the name Francis, who's in Italy known as Il Poverello, the poor man, and the way he's lived his life till now, I think that people more and more expect our hierarchy, in fact, to have that level of modest life.
One last question. Will he be a reformer? Will Pope Francis be a reformer? And if so, how?
Well, again, I'm impressed with that quote that I read about him yesterday where he says it's not the bishop's jobs to be regulators of the faith. In other words, not policemen of the faith so much as people who simply transmit the faith. In other words, I think he sees himself as being more a pastor than a policeman.
Nicholas Cafardi is an expert on canon law, dean emeritus, and professor of law at the Duquesne University Law School. Thanks so much for joining us today on Essential Pittsburgh.
You're welcome. It's great to be here.
Coming up, we'll begin our St. Patrick's Day celebration with a man who can tell you everything you ever wanted to know about bagpipes, plus a preview of Pittsburgh's St. Patrick's Day parade when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.